We've been hearing from artists for a very long time about that because, you know, we were pushing family housing, you know, senior housing, and never specifically for artists, you know. So we had to make sure that they're integrated into the advocacy that we're doing to make sure that that population is also covered, because we as a community, especially in the Mission, cannot be sustainable with our artists. There's a cultural economy that we have that we build on, and they are part of that.
Welcome to Voices of the Community, your source for in-depth discussions on critical issues facing Northern California. Today's episode is part of our continuing special series focused on the resurgence of the arts and culture sector post-COVID-19. Our journey begins with a reflection on the recent State of the Arts Summit, a collaborative effort with Arts for a Better Bay Area. Among the breakout sessions, one topic resonated deeply: affordable housing for our creative workforce. Feedback poured in from summit attendees expressing a desire for more time to explore this pressing issue. In response, we've crafted three follow-up episodes, each delving into key discussions from the summit. Today, we shine a light on the Race and Equity in All Planning Coalition as they spearhead the creation of the People's Plan for Affordable Housing in San Francisco. Joining us are two influential voices driving this initiative: Diane Ruiz, co-founder and reporter of People Power Media, and Eric Arguello, president and resident chair of Cali 24 Latino Cultural District. Together, they'll share their insights, challenges, and aspirations as they navigate the complexities of housing accessibility in the city of San Francisco. Stay with us as we embark on this illuminating journey into the heart of community activism. This is Voices of the Community, where dialogue leads to change and every voice matters. And welcome to Voices of the Community. And I would love it if you could share with our audience a little background on, you know, your founding of People Power Media and your work in the creation of the Equity in All Planning Coalition.
Thanks again for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity. I'm co-founder of People Power Media. We are a nonprofit based here in San Francisco that works to empower folks on housing justice and equity in land use. And we do that through organizing, policy innovation, and multimedia popular education. We've founded, during the pandemic, the Race and Equity in All Planning Coalition, REPSF for short, which is a coalition of over 40 grassroots organizations, affordable housing developers, cultural districts, and other nonprofits and groups throughout San Francisco, and People Power Media facilitates that coalition.
Thank you. And Eric, could you please provide a little background on yourself and then also on the Cali 24 Latino Cultural District?
Sure. Thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you for having me. My name is Eric Arguello. I'm founder and president of Cali 24 Latino Cultural District. Cali 24 formed in 2014 because of the gentrification displacement of over 10,000 Latinx residents from the Mission from 2000 to 2020. And basically, the work that we do is really try to preserve community and all our cultural assets in the Mission District by creating a culture district. And we focus on affordable housing, focus on building economic sustainability with our small businesses, includes our vendors, events, anything that really we see as a cultural asset that's needed to maintain and preserve a community.
And does the cultural district actually create any affordable housing itself?
We do a lot of advocacy. Any kind of development that's coming into the cultural district, we engage with the developer to make sure that it aligns with the mission and vision of Cali 24. We have created architecture design guidelines that guides the developers and the community, which helps streamline development and making sure that it fits the character of the neighborhood as far as the design scope.
Great. And Diane, coming back to you, could you share with the audience some background on why the citywide People's Plan was created and who was part of creating the plan?
Yeah, so we created the citywide People's Plan last year. It was actually about a year exactly ago. And it was really a culmination of community plans that have been existing for decades from organizations such as Cali 24 and also, you know, community organizations throughout San Francisco, Chinatown, South of Market, especially the neighborhoods that face gentrification and displacement the most. So we combined all of those existing area plans, community-led area plan, and we created the citywide People's Plan. And we also updated it with innovative policy from our members, our affordable housing developers, They are advocates for affordable housing. They are tenant rights organizations. They are all the people on the ground helping our unhoused folk and providing services for low-income people, helping them stay off the street, you know, prevent homelessness. And they're really like the heart and soul of the city. And we created REP to create collective power amongst each other. And it's all of those people that helped to create the People's Plan. So it was a big undertaking. And the reason we actually did it was because the city was undergoing a process called the housing element, which guides the housing policies for the city for the next 8 years. It's a state process that has to happen every 8 years. And the way that the draft housing element was going, there was really hardly any real solutions to the most pressing issues that we face. You know, housing affordability being, you know, the number one issue that every San Franciscan faces. So we got together all of the best policies to actually make housing more affordable in the city through those existing plans and through the expertise of our community.
Thank you. And as I was doing some reading, and it's really wonderful, and we'll make sure that we share all of the work that the coalition's done and People Power Media, you know, on our episode landing page. But it looked like initially there wasn't as much arts and culture integrated into it. And then as the coalition came together and worked together, it looked like more arts and culture was integrated into the actual plan.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, so we have members, including cultural districts in REP, such as Calle 24. We also have the Soma Filipinas Filipino Heritage Cultural District. So we have artists and artist groups in the coalition. We are actually actively working to reach out to specific artists, individual artists, to see how we can find ways to better integrate them into our work and have specific asks for them, for example. And that's, you know, we're starting with organizations that we have and see how they have incorporated arts into our work. But, you know, a lot of the communities in San Francisco, sometimes they get siloed, right? And that it needs to be a deliberate effort to reach out to the different groups.
And Eric, turning to you, how did Calle 24 get engaged in the Race and Equity in All Planning Coalition?
Through some outreach that they did. They reached out to a lot of the leadership throughout the city. You know, we were one of them. And, you know, I thought it was a great way for us to build power collectively and to work with other groups, organizations, activists citywide. So it was an opportunity to really work together with others.
Great. And Diane, coming back to you, one of the things I found, it was so well thought out, and you've done chapters and again, lots of great background information, but the creation of your, you know, kind of framework for city planning, the desegregation, affordability, culture, and arts stability framework. Could you share with us, you know, how that came about?
And sustainability,
right.
Yeah, that was the other S. Yeah, so it actually came out of our award-winning animated short called Priced Out, which you can watch on our website, peoplepowermedia.org. And Priced Out explains why housing is so expensive in San Francisco. And it does it through an animation, you know, a story of this couple looking for housing in San Francisco. And as a cartoon, they get to explore all these different things that are magical. For example, a mural that explains kind of the history of San Francisco and why, you know, things ended up like this. And kind of they talk with a developer and a banker and the mayor. So after we created the animation, everybody was always like, okay, great. Like, it explains why we do talk about solutions, but people really got fired up and they wanted to know, like, what can we do about this? And we actually had planned another series where we would go to different communities around the world and look at ways that they solve issues of affordability and then things like that. And then the pandemic hit and we couldn't travel. And so we decided to really try to write down what each of the elements that you needed to create equitable city planning, which is what we were going to focus that documentary on, kind of focusing on an issue in each city, for example. So we wrote it down instead. And it was actually because of that framework that we created that the Race and Equity in All Planning Coalition came about, because folks in the community who we have been organizing with for a really long time, they looked at it and they're like, this is amazing. This is really what the community needs, is sort of this kind of straightforward way to think visionary, to think in visionary ways, to think in aspirational ways, because our communities are under attack all the time. And Eric can definitely talk about this in the mission for sure. You know, we're always, as progressives and vulnerable populations in San Francisco, all we can do a lot of the time is just fight back and try to mitigate some of the damage that market rate development, you know, anti-homeless and other, you know, external things like the pandemic, like we can just, all we can do is just survive. And so a lot of the time, the visionary kind of language, visionary kind of policies, they get put on the back burner because we just don't have the time to like get to that. So there was actually a lack of this type of framework for a while. And I think we were able to apply the knowledge that we have to put it in a way also that is accessible to folks.
And following up on that, Diane, you were able to actually get some of the framework adopted in the housing element. So could you share a little bit about that process? Because we know how easy and wonderful the city planning department is and how easy they are to work with, et cetera. So I can only imagine the whole coalition had lots and lots of pushback, et cetera. So walk us through how that went and what you guys have been able to accomplish.
Yes. So the equity in land use framework that People Power Media created, that's actually separate from the People's Plan. The People's Plan was a community driven process, and the People's Plan was created in response to the housing element really lacking any kind of real substance when it came to the ideals that they spouted. So supposedly this is the first housing element that centers equity, racial and social equity, but they didn't actually have anything in there that could develop that, that could create the ambitious affordable housing plan that they had set out. Even before this housing element session, we're supposed to be building 57% of all of our housing is supposed to be affordable. And there isn't anything in there to actually get there.
So Diane, I want folks to understand, in the housing element that they finally had to get through the state is requiring them to build around 80,000 housing units by, what is it, 2031? And so what I'm hearing you say is that 55% of that 80 some odd thousand needs to be affordable. So how did that work out?
It's not working out because they don't have a plan. You know, the mayor's plan literally is, let's get a bunch of people together, not from the community, even though we asked, to try to think of a way to get to that number. And they're going to come out with a report in January. And that was their plan, and trying to be like, oh, well, the state doesn't give us enough money. So it's also a really kind of twisted, it's sort of like an on paper requirement, because the state is threatening to actually take away affordable housing dollars from San Francisco if they don't build the overall number, they don't meet the overall goal of 80,000, which is a huge amount. It's more than San Francisco has ever built. And so it's really just a drive for them to have developer giveaways to push this narrative, like I said, that build, build, build narrative, that San Francisco's not building enough and that's why housing prices are so high. But everybody knows you can't afford the condos that they're building, the new apartment that they're building. And it's not a matter of there not being enough. If you just open Zillow right now, you can see, you know, hundreds of listings that are just sitting there vacant. It's about forcing the city to make sure that they build affordable. And there's lots of programs that we have in the citywide People's Plan that could make huge steps towards building affordable housing. You know, one example is land banking. That's like setting aside land, for example, land that the city already owns, public land for affordable housing that can be enacted tomorrow. We can designate that for affordable housing. And that's the type of thing that we talk about in the People's Plan.
Thank you. And Eric, coming back to you, could you talk a little bit about, from Cali 24 Cultural District's point of view, how has the citywide people's plan helped provide more affordable housing or address some of the specific issues, especially in the Mission, which has been under attack for obviously many decades? That's the reason for creating the Cultural District.
Sure. Yeah. You know, it aligns with the priorities that we have as a cultural district. You know, a lot of the things that we see, you know, in the housing element, like we were talking about, is just policy statements, right? It's not actual plans, you know, it's not a priority to build affordable housing. And so the people's plan is more of prioritizing the low to moderate income, particularly the low income housing, right? Which we prioritize also for the culture districts through a CHESS report that we are required to do. It's a cultural heritage economic sustainability report that each culture district does, which includes housing, right? How are we going to prioritize affordable housing? You know, how are we going to, you know, raise funds? So, and it's done through, you know, bringing community members together through focus groups, through stakeholder interviews, through public meetings to come up with a plan. So it's a plan that comes from the community and up instead of top down, that we see a lot of the times. And again, it's an uphill battle because, you know, we have to work with the city and other entities to be able to reach our goals. And when the city's priorities are not the same as ours, then basically we're just, you know, doing a lot of, having a lot of conversations, a lot of policy statements are being made. There is no teeth to anything. And so we're constantly just pushing and pushing to try to get, you know, them to make affordable housing a priority.
Welcome back to Voices of the Community, where we delve into critical issues facing Northern California communities. Voices of the Community is made possible by generous support from the Zeldebach Family Foundation, dedicated to ensuring vibrant work is created, new voices celebrated, and diverse communities have opportunities to thrive. Learn more at zff.org. We're also supported by the Peaceful World Foundation, fostering a culture of global peace through hosted conversations and education. Discover more at peacefulworldfoundation.org. Now, if you're just joining us, our guests today are Diane Ruiz, co-founder and reporter of People Power Media, and Eric Arguello, president and resident chair of Cali 24 Latino Cultural District. We're exploring their collaboration with the Race and Equity in All Planning Coalition to craft the People's Plan for Affordable Housing and the City of San Francisco. Let's rejoin our conversation as Eric highlights the integral role of artists as community and cultural assets and how cultural districts are stepping up to support them while addressing the pressing need for more affordable housing. And staying with you, Eric, can you talk a little bit about how, because it's in the cultural district, how much focus within your work is around providing affordable housing for our creative workforce?
Sure. You know, artists in our community are part of our cultural assets. And what we do, and they tend to be siloed out, the artists in many cases and historically. And what we've tried to do with the culture district is bringing all these different elements that create community, right? And it includes the artist, right? They need housing. They're the ones who create our murals. They create our events. You know, there are performers, there are musicians and dancers. And so we integrate them into all our plans. And a recent legislation that came up was to build housing for artists, right? I believe it's 10% inclusionary for market rate housing in the neighborhood. And we've been hearing from artists for a very long time about that because, you know, we were pushing family housing, you know, senior housing, and never specifically for artists. You know, so we had to make sure that they're integrated into the advocacy that we're doing to make sure that that population is also covered, because we as a community, especially in the Mission, cannot be sustainable with our artists. There's a cultural economy that we have that we build on, and they are part of that. They're essential to that. So making sure that they have housing so they can stay in the neighborhood where they are being creative.
And the piece of legislation is AB 812 that, for folks who are listening, watching the show, we had Julie Baker on who shared about AB 812. And Eric, you were sharing before we came on that Cali 24 had worked to help get this signed. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, Cali 24 and Sulu Filipinos are the only state designated cultural district. And there is a statewide coalition that advocates for funding for cultural districts statewide. So it was an opportunity through the coalition to advocate to the governor to make sure that he signed to this bill. So, you know, through letter writing campaigns, through, you know, working together and raising that voice helped push this through.
And so as I recall from the conversation with Julian and reading AB 812, it requires 10% of any housing being built in cultural districts to be set aside for creative workforce for artists.
That's correct. Yes. We wish it could be more.
Of course.
You know, it's a start, you know, and there are a lot of competing interests. So we have to balance out what the needs of the community are to make sure that, you know, we cover as much as we can, you know, for artists.
Are there any projects in the pipeline, Eric, or developers that, you know, Cali 24 has been in discussion with regards to, you know, housing in the district that could utilize AB 812?
You know, right now there's a lot of stalled projects, you know, so nothing's moving through right now because of the economy. Things are very expensive for the developers. So we have some projects in the pipeline before this legislation went through. So we haven't seen anything specifically that's requiring this amount yet. We think that eventually as things get moving, you know, I think we'll be seeing some of that. But right now we have a lot of stalled projects.
Right.
Before this legislation.
Lots of stalled projects everywhere in San Francisco, or projects that are just being turned back to the banks, sadly.
Absolutely. And for other folks to pick them up.
Yeah. It almost seems like they should create the entire downtown San Francisco should be a cultural district, and then they can convert office space into housing.
Agreed.
So, Diane, I'm going to come back to you because as we were starting our conversation, you were talking about one of your major focuses is to change the narrative on housing. And you mentioned that earlier in our conversation. Could you kind of, you know, share with us, you know, what you've been doing, how you see the why this is so important, changing the narrative about housing and housing development in San Francisco?
Yeah, sure. So one of the missions of the Rep SF coalition is to change the narrative that is dominating our mainstream media and politicians' rhetoric, which is a lot of it is basically build, build, build. Like, we need to build our way out of the housing crisis. And that is going to be led by development after development, really just ramming it down every neighborhood's throats. But, you know, we all know that that's not going to create affordability. It's just going to create investment properties. It's going to create vacant unit, vacant buildings. You know, like you mentioned, the hollowing out of downtown is, you know, one example of, you know, just the amount of vacancies that we already have in San Francisco. And so none of that is, you know, being turned into affordable housing, which would be another solution to use the existing assets that we have. We have a program for small buildings to be bought by the city to be turned into permanently affordable housing that we could expand. And that would be another way to create affordable housing in the city immediately. And so in our narrative change work in RepSF, we really want to move away from this build, build, build narrative. And the way that we're going to do that is move towards that of housing justice. And that's making sure that historically marginalized communities really lead all of the efforts and decisions that are about their neighborhood. They get to decide, you know, what affordable means. Like Eric said, you know, it's really focusing on low-income folks that many of them don't even qualify for affordable housing right now. It's, you know, talking about protecting tenants. Right now, there's a legislation that the mayor is trying to push, you know, that comes out of the housing element, focusing on the worst parts of the housing element, not the parts RepSF was able to get into the housing element, but rather it's all about what they call streamlining, which we call developer giveaways. It's just trying to take away constraints. It's the same, you know, neoliberal, like, trickle-down policy that has been discredited in so many other areas of our economy. But for some reason, housing is sort of the last bastion for it. And up until the state state and governors, and also they all adopt this type of policy. So really want to get away from that. And there are a lot of organizations I have to call out, like some like EMB, the Yes in My Backyard, and SPUR, and Housing Action Coalition, that really peddle lies about this policy and they're able to sugarcoat it in a lot of the things that San Francisco's stand for, like diversity, affordability, you know, and and community. They're able to use a lot of the language that progressives have and make it seem like that's how we're going to accomplish those things, is to just let developers do what they want to do. And none of that will make affordability. If you let developers do what they want, there's never an additional thing that the city says, oh, if you can do that, you have to increase your inclusionary, for example, increase the amount that you have in your building that's affordable. There's never like a give and take or if there is, there's nothing close to the 50% that we're supposed to be building in the city of that affordability, maybe just like a 1 or 2% here or there. It's nothing to the levels that we actually need. So we need to get away from this narrative that the only two sides to the housing story is the yes in my backyard or no in my backyard, NIMBY. Like, not everyone that opposes development is someone that is a NIMBY, someone that says no just because of, you know, things like shadow or kind of like not life or death issues such as displacement from your home or equity or making sure that San Francisco continues to be diverse racially and socially. You know, those are the reasons why people like us oppose development, because it's not what our community needs. And land is really precious in San Francisco. And when you see a empty lot turn into another high-rise condo that we can't afford, that's a lot that could be used for affordable housing instead. You know, the city is even giving away public land for expensive housing. So, you know, this is the kind of thing that we're fighting for.
Thank you, Diane. And so bringing us to a closure, I was going to ask each of you to just share with the audience projects that you're working on and how folks who are listening, watching the show can actually get engaged in supporting your work. So, Eric, tell us what you guys are up to.
There's several things that we're doing. I think the most current thing and pressing thing is there is a project that actually is starting to move. It's a large project. We call it the Next Monster in the Mission, which is a large development coming into 22nd and Mission. There's a community meeting happening at the Mission Cultural Center between 24th and 25th. We're asking people to come out. You know, we're asking the developer to create affordable housing, 100% affordable housing, and work with the community to be creative to get that done.
And then where can folks go, Eric, to find out more about the project and how to get engaged? And if they can't make it, you know, support letters, et cetera.
They could go to our webpage, calientecuatrosf.org, and they could email info@calientecuatrosf.org for more information.
Great. And Diane, how about your team's work? How can folks continue to stay engaged in the work, in the coalition?
Yeah, so you can email info@repsf.org, repsf.org, to get involved directly with REP, with the Race and Equity in All Planning Coalition. It is a coalition of community groups with some individuals. You know, currently we don't really do outreach specifically to individuals because we want to make sure the people that participate are accountable to a community and have community's needs upfront when they participate and advocate. That being said, we know that everybody is affected by the issue that we are advocating for. And again, we are setting up an action team that individuals can help support for hearings, for example, to speak at public hearings, to write letters to the city. You can write letters to the city now and the Board of Supervisors, specifically the head of the Land Use Committee, Supervisor Melgar, about legislation that they're considering that we think is very dangerous. It proposes to demolish rent-controlled housing throughout the city, and in order to accommodate that number of the 80,000 units to be built in San Francisco, which is really the only way that they will be able to accomplish that, is to tear down rent-controlled housing throughout the Richmond District, the Sunset, and then also continue the gentrification and displacement in neighborhoods like Chinatown, the Mission, and South of Market. So we really want to make sure that tenants are protected. We're really facing a redevelopment style issue here, you know, and what they're trying to do is enable developers to redevelop the city and have no protections for people if they get displaced from a torn down building, unlike redevelopment when there was lease and agency for that. back in the, you know, the 70s. And so, you know, it's a big threat and we're trying to fight against it. You can also just tell the city that they have a legal mandate to affirmatively further fair housing. It's another, you know, acronyms are kind of a thing in the housing world, but so AFFH, we need to affirmatively further fair housing. It's a civil right. Federal requirement that the city and the state are not doing, they're ignoring in favor for developer giveaways. And we need to keep fighting to make sure that all of the things that we were able to get into the housing element actually create affordable housing in the city. And this is all the things that the RFSF coalition is fighting for.
Great. Thank you. So I want to thank Diane and Eric for sharing their organization's work to support our arts and culture workforce. We will make sure that our viewers and listeners have your contact information, your websites, and your social media so they can engage and support all of your work in support of both our artist and cultural workforce, as well as all of the families that can't afford housing in San Francisco. So thank you, Eric and Diane, for being on Voices of the Community.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
And with that, we've come to the end of another insightful episode of Voices of the Community. Today, we've heard from Diane Ruiz, co-founder and reporter of People Power Media, and Eric Arguello, president and resident chair of Cali 24 Latino Cultural District, as they shared their efforts with the Race and Equity in All Planning Coalition to craft the People's Plan for Affordable Housing and the City of San Francisco. To learn more about our guests and their organizations, programs, services, volunteer opportunities, and how to support their cause with a donation, visit voicesofthecommunity.com, click on the link to the Arts and Culture series, and find Episode 8. While you're on our website, take a moment to explore the wealth of content available. You can watch or listen to the full episodes and one-on-one interviews from our Arts and Culture series. And don't forget to sign up for our newsletter to stay informed about upcoming shows and special features. After immersing yourself in these captivating stories, we encourage you to consider making a donation and volunteering to support our vibrant arts and culture organizations, as well as our dedicated arts and culture workforce. Today's episode was made possible through a special co-production partnership with Arts for a Better Bay Area for their State of the Arts Summit on June 28, 2023. We extend our heartfelt thanks to our incredible technical crew, including the audio and video wizard and our associate producer, Eric Estrada. Additionally, we'd like to express our gratitude to our esteemed co-production partner, Bayback Media, and their dedicated staff, Paula Argoni, Andy Konami, Issa Nakazawa, and Javon Giles. And let's not forget the graphics magic skillfully crafted by Casey Nance from Citron Studios. We extend our sincere gratitude to our valued broadcast partners who help bring Voices of the Community to the airwaves. Thank you to KSFP LP-FM, broadcasting on 102.5 FM in San Francisco, and KPCA LP-FM, airing on 103.3 FM in Petaluma. We're also grateful for the support of Petaluma Community Access TV and Bayback Media's SF Commons Public Access TV Channels 29 and 76. Their partnership ensures that our discussions reach a wider audience, sparking meaningful conversations and fostering community engagement. Thank you for your continued support and commitment to amplifying diverse voices and perspectives. Voices of the Community is made possible by generous support from the Zillabak Family Foundation, dedicated to ensuring vibrant work is created, new voices celebrated, and diverse communities have opportunities to thrive. Learn more at zff.org. We're also supported by the Peaceful World Foundation, fostering a culture of global peace through hosted conversations and education. Discover more at peacefulworldfoundation.org. Take us along on your next walk, workout, or drive by subscribing to Voices of the Community on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast. And if you've been enjoying the show, please take a moment to leave us a rating and review on the podcast platform of your choice. Your feedback helps us improve and reach more listeners. To watch past and future episodes of Voices of the Community, subscribe to our YouTube channel. Simply visit youtube.com and search for Gio Koster. We value your input and ideas. Reach out to us by sending an email to george@georgecoster.com. We would love to hear from you. I'm George Koster from San Francisco, and on behalf of our entire team, thank you for joining us on this journey of exploration and dialogue. Until next time, remember, your voice matters.